Welcome to The Swing.
Canadian political perspectives for a global audience.
I'm Yaroslav Baran.
I'm Heather Bakken. Today we're going to talk about a revamped Canadian federal cabinet, what the Prime Minister is trying to do with this shakeup, and a reading of the tea leaves. Yaro, what's your hot take on what Prime Minister Carney is trying to do here?
Look, following a change election in which Mr. Carney went to great lengths to try to distance himself from both the style and policy legacy of his predecessor, Justin Trudeau, Mr. Carney unveiled a ministry with half its members new to the senior-most executive body of the Government of Canada and half being experienced hands with previous cabinet roles. He tried to reconcile the interests of new, something different, with maintaining the corporate memory that he's going to need in the turbulent times ahead.
Okay, so you mentioned ministry. Can you explain that to our audience who may be confusing that with the Ministry of Silly Walks on Monty Python?
Sure. Yeah, just on a technical note, you know, despite the communications trappings of this being a new ministry, focus on new, the May 13th composition actually represents a cabinet shuffle. You know, the Carney ministry or the Carney cabinet, the 30th, you know, government of Canada, was actually formed on March 14th, and all permutations of cabinet under Prime Minister Carney's continuous government, whether it lasts 1 year or 10, and regardless of how many changes we see, are going to be the same ministry. It's all going to be the 30th cabinet, the 30th government, even though we have seen some structural changes.
Okay, that's okay, we've ticked off the nerd box. Now, getting down to the substance, how much of an overhaul was this actually?
Well, the most obvious thing that stands apart is the reversion to a traditional two-tier model with senior ministers of the Crown and junior secretaries of state. Now, on the surface, following the flat cabinet structure of former Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, it looks like it's something new. But this is actually the traditional model of, you know, recent Canadian political history. The ministries of Stephen Harper, Paul Martin, Jean Chrétien, Kim Campbell, Brian Mulroney, John Turner, Pierre Trudeau, Lester Pearson, all of them followed this two-tier model that we saw Mr. Carney recreate in this cabinet shuffle.
With the 10 secretaries of state.
Yeah, that's
junior
right.
Ministers.
Yeah. Now, I mean, in terms of nomenclature, it appears that Mr. Carney is going to choose to apply the term cabinet, quote unquote, only to the senior ministers and not to the entire ministry. But I mean, that's his discretion.
Okay, and that's 49 to 10, right?
Yeah, there are 39 ministers in total. 20 of them are men, 19 of them are women. So he's preserving that gender parity legacy or innovation from his predecessor. But that's about all that he wanted to preserve, at least in terms of, you know, optics.
Okay, speaking of optics, it is touted as new perspectives and experience, this cabinet. What do you say to that?
Well, anytime you're going to have 39 ministers, you're obviously going to have different perspectives. I mean, it just comes with having so many people sitting at the table. But again, this is, you know, managing a balance of change versus experience, and also managing an effort to distance his brand from that of his predecessor. Now, to that effect, in demonstrating change, or frankly reconciling these two interests, it's noteworthy that all the senior-most portfolios, you know, we're talking finance, foreign affairs, industry, defense, justice, international trade, transport, public safety, you know, all of them, every single one, is in different hands compared to the Trudeau cabinet. Only two of them, finance and transport, remain in the same hands as before the shuffle, but in those cases, those two ministers just got the job 2 months ago. And in all of those cases, though, he did use experienced ministers, people with cabinet experience who have honed their skills over years. So it's experience on the one hand, but making sure that it was thoroughly shuffled to have different people, different faces running different departments.
Okay, well, speaking of different faces, you did mention the foreign affairs portfolio, which is very significant at this point in time, critical, I would say. Tell us a little bit about that choice with Anita Anand.
Well, yay, she was a very highly regarded defense minister previously. She really made her mark as a defense minister in the previous government. I think it's rather significant that the new foreign minister for Canada is a previous defense minister. This is probably a signal that we're going to see a more muscular foreign policy, a move away from the traditional liberal soft power approach on the world stage, or the broad multilateralism in favor of a smart lateralism and a real politique, which is a function of the turbulent times we're living in.
Canada's had a bit of a tricky relationship with India in recent years.
Look, either incidentally or cleverly by design, it is significant that she herself personally hails from an Indian background, and in fact reportedly swore her oath of office on the Bhagavad Gita. So there is an opportunity for a reset in the Canada-India relationship, which was really in a deep freeze under the previous Trudeau government. I think this is an opportunity, if managed smartly and carefully, not to suggest that there's going to be a capitulation by Canada to be steamrolled by India, by no means. But often what you really need to clear the decks is new people to front a sticky bilateral relationship, and there's potentially huge opportunity here having her in this portfolio.
Okay. The other one significant portfolio is the U.S., and the Prime Minister, Mark Carney, has made it pretty clear that he's going to be the top diplomat negotiating that relationship. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, the Canada-U.S. relationship is unique among any bilateral relationships anywhere in the world. We have over $3 billion in trade crossing the border every single day, at least we used to. And this is a relationship where we haven't had a war in over 200 years. It's a peaceful border with massive, massive economic and social integration going back and forth. In all circumstances, the Prime Minister is the top diplomat for the U.S. relationship. But on a day-to-day basis, that relationship, the trade relationship, is going to be fronted by Dominic LeBlanc. He's responsible specifically for Canada-U.S. trade. So we've got one minister for Canada-U.S. trade. Then we have an international trade minister separately, basically responsible for trade diversification. So we've got two international trade ministers, but most of our trade rests in the hands of Dominic LeBlanc, at least our biggest trading partner. And look, he is also a very experienced fixer. He's probably the most competent fixer under the previous government. He's a real political animal, hails from a political family. Politics is in his blood. He's good at sticky files and smoothing them out.
So what's next?
Well, two things: ministerial mandate letters and the cabinet committee structure.
Okay, what about mandate letters?
Well, mandate letters are a personal letter that every cabinet minister receives from the prime minister telling them exactly what they are supposed to be focusing on. Usually it's a chunk of the platform and a chunk of the throne speech, but it gives clear instructions. Your top 10 to-do list is the following. Now, traditionally, these were confidential letters, like on pain of death, do you pull it out of your vault and share the contents? But under the Trudeau government, they started a new tradition of making them public in the interests of transparency. So far, indications are that that Mark Carney is going to continue that new Trudeau tradition of publicizing the mandate letters so that everybody can see what's in each minister's to-do list.
Okay, so cabinet committees.
Yeah, I was going to say we're waiting for them, but stop the presses. They just came out. The cabinet committee structure has just gone public.
Okay, so what's your hot take on this?
Let me preface by saying this. The overall committee composition, I'm going to give Mark Carney an A. I think he did a great job at balancing the competing interests of newness and experience. On cabinet committees, I'm going to give them a C+.
Ouch.
And here's why. I like that he's reverted to the traditional model. You know, there's a priorities and planning committee, an operations committee, and a treasury board. Those are the foundational committees. And on top of that, there are three policy committees, one for economy, one for social policy, and one for foreign affairs and defense. That's the traditional way of doing it, and it makes a whole lot of sense.
Very straightforward.
Yeah. What I don't like is that they've reverted to some of the euphemistic language that we saw under the previous government that was a little bit silly and sowed a lot of confusion. Like, remember, we saw things like a growing and middle class cabinet committee. People are like, what is that? Is that social policy? Is that economic policy? Like, and then there was an economic and social A versus economic and social B, and it just created confusion. I think that they could have done away with things like calling a new cabinet committee the Quality of Life and Well-Being Committee. Like, why lead with virtue signaling rather than like a back to basics and back to, you know, business kind of format or signal that you've done in everything else.
So, which is the Prime Minister's bailiwick.
Yeah, this is it. He's been back to business in every other aspect, but in this one sphere, he's kind of reverted to that euphemistic virtue signaling kind of thing that we saw under Trudeau. There's also a little bit of inefficiency. There's a new Government Transformation and Government Efficiency Committee, which I think is totally redundant because both of those things are squarely within the purview of Treasury Board. Treasury Board is responsible for machinery of government, so why have two machinery of government cabinet committees? There's also an incident response group committee of cabinet, like not permanently populated, like supposed to be ad hoc depending on circumstances, but the operations committee of cabinet has always traditionally been responsible for crisis management. So again, why have two separate crisis management committees in cabinet? It'll be chaotic, it'll create inefficiency and confusion.
Okay, well, I think we should leave it there, and maybe there are two because we see a lot of crises ahead. We'll find out, but that will be our next episode on The Swing if it is.
You got it.
Okay, thanks, Yero.
Anytime, Heather.